You are now listening to the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele.
What's good? This is indeed the Calcio Corner podcast. We cover all corners of Italian football and more. My name is Raffaele. I thank you for taking the time to listen to this, the 70th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. Please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Be sure to give me a follow on Twitter. My account is at ItalianoCalcio. Check the link in my Twitter bio for all the links that you need to support and listen to my podcast. So a little bit later on this episode, we will have on SPAL's president, Joe Tacopina. Just came off salvation. His team will be staying up in Serie B after a little potential relegation scare, but they will be staying up. So we'll be talking with him a little bit later on. It's been a while. I think I haven't put out a podcast since January. I do really apologize for the long, long delay. I've been really wanting to get back behind the microphone and put out a podcast and talk Calcio, talk Serie A. I've certainly been active on Twitter, but you know, just personal life, work schedule, it's just been really hectic the past couple months. All positive things, but just hectic. And I just have not had the time to get behind the microphone and produce a podcast, and certainly not produce one to the quality that I like to, or at least hope that I produce somewhat of a quality podcast. So it's been a little while, but I'm definitely happy to be back behind the microphone. Lots been happening in Serie A with the Scudetto race and the relegation battle. Obviously, since I last put out a podcast, Italy failed to qualify for the World Cup. I really never talked about that on a podcast, and I'm not going to delve into that. No need to go down that depressing route, but it's certainly a shock. You know, there's no guarantees that we would have got past Portugal in that second playoff game we would have had to play. I would have picked Italy to win. I'm always going to be bullish on Italy, as I always say on this podcast. But to lose to North Macedonia at home in the way we did right before, you know, the game was looking like it was going to go to extra time. For Donnarumma to concede that goal, it was painful. And again, it's disappointing that we got to go another 4 years without a World Cup. And who knows, you know, the next World Cup is supposed to be here in North America. I'm obviously based here in New York, so I'm praying to God that Italy qualify for the World Cup for just for my sanity, but also because my guess is they could potentially play a game somewhere here in New York, New Jersey, in this tri-state area that would be easy for me to travel to. And I definitely would love to go to that those potential games that Italy are playing in here in the United States in the 2026 World Cup, and we host it here in North America. So from that standpoint, selfishly, I certainly would like Italy to qualify, as I always want to, but even more so in that 2026 one, so I could attend and see them playing a World Cup game. But again, I'm not going to go down that rabbit hole. We will start off this 70th episode of the podcast by talking about the recent action in Serie A. The season is coming close to a close. I believe there's just three more rounds left. It's been a really entertaining season. It's by far been, you know, obviously I'm biased, but it's been the best title race in, you know, Europe's main top leagues. We already know that PSG has won Ligue 1. Bayern Munich have won the Bundesliga. Real Madrid have already won La Liga. Not that any of those leagues are really up for in the air. It was kind of almost like a foregone conclusion those teams are going to win. So, you know, here we are, three rounds left in Serie A, and yet we still don't know who's going to win. Milan obviously have the advantage over their city rivals, Inter. AC Milan with 77 points, Inter with 75 points. Three games left, both teams victorious this weekend in their respective games. Fiorentina, a good Fiorentina side under Vincenzo Italiano. However, we know La Viola have been in a bit of a downward spiral. That game was at the San Siro. And to be honest with you, Milan looked really good. They looked the better side. They certainly were deserving of these 3 points. But their goal from Rafael Leao, albeit he had to work hard to still finish that, and it was not a gimme goal, it came off a goalkeeper mistake, right? The ball was kicked right to Rafael Leao. Again, he still had to work hard to get into the box and get around the few guys to finish that. And I don't want to take anything away from him. But in some ways, you could say Milan were fortunate to get the 3 points. Even though they deserved the win, they outplayed Fiorentina. You wonder if that goalkeeper mistake didn't happen and Rafael Leao wasn't able to make that nice finish, do they come away with all 3 points? But regardless, they get their 3 points that they needed to maintain their lead over Inter. Inter were in action just after Milan. They beat Udinese 2-1. They got off to the early 2-0 lead in the first half. Looked like they'd go into cruise control, but Udinese's been a tough side this season, have been in pretty good form. This game was in Udinese, so they were at home. They had the fans behind them supporting them, and they made Inter sweat that out in the second half. It certainly was not a gimme. They ended up getting a goal, Udinese, off a Pusetto goal in the 72nd minute. And again, made Inter and their fans sweat that out. If Inter dropped points there, that certainly would have handed Milan an even bigger lead and more likely to win the Scudetto. But I wanted to just talk a little bit about that race. Again, three games left. If you look at Milan's schedule and Inter's schedule, there's no denying that Milan have the more difficult schedule. From one standpoint, they have two of the three games remaining away from the San Siro, whereas Inter have two home games left and just the one road game. Milan have the two-point advantage, as I've mentioned. However, they have the more difficult schedule. Their next game will be at Verona. They'll be home to Atalanta, then at Sassuolo. We'll talk about Sassuolo in a little bit, and if they play anything like they did against Napoli this past weekend, then Milan have nothing to worry about. But those are three tricky games, three tough opponents, three pretty good sides. By no means are any of those a team that you could just walk all over. Inter, they play at home against Empoli. They play at Cagliari, who already are very much in a relegation battle, so they do have something to fight for, but still a much more inferior side compared to Inter. And then they will close out the season at home against Sampdoria. Sampdoria's side that are really playing for nothing, especially by then. They're safe from relegation. They have nothing to play for. So the points favor Milan. The schedule favors Inter. So if again, it figures to be a really good battle down the stretch and one that could very easily come down to that final round of the season, which would be obviously what Serie A would hope for, what neutral fans would hope for. Certainly Milan fans will hope that, you know, Inter slip up at some point and Milan could lock up this Scudetto before that final round. Inter fans would love for Milan to slip up prior to that as well. But from a neutral standpoint, we're all certainly hoping that it comes down to the stretch. I do think Milan will close out and win the Scudetto. They just look like a team destined to win it. They've had their ups and downs this season, as has Inter, as had Napoli, who were in the Scudetto race up until a few rounds ago. But they just look to, you know, to pull out these results. Like I said, they were able to capitalize off the goalkeeping mistake from Fiorentina, and Rafael Leao was able to finish it. Kind of eked out some wins before. You'd think just a few rounds ago, Sandro Tonali at the very end coming up with that big goal to give Milan the win against Lazio. So we've seen Milan do this in the past where they just pull out these magical wins, and it just seems like, you know, they're kind of destined, as I said, to win the Scudetto, to beat their city rivals. Schedule doesn't favor them. The points do. I do think in the end they will win it, although Inter are going to make them work for it, certainly. Inter, in my opinion, are the better team. They're the more talented team. They've been more consistent this season, but, they slipped up against Bologna midweek in that makeup game. We all thought, myself included, I've been touting it the whole time, that, you know, it was almost like a foregone conclusion that Inter would get that win over Bologna, get those 3 points, and take control of the Scudetto race. They would be sitting at 78 points, where Milan would have 77, but that wasn't the case. Bologna had other plans for them, and that certainly could cost Inter a back-to-back Scudettos, or Scudetti, I should say. So we'll see. But it's certainly an exciting title race. Again, if Milan pull this off, I would not be shocked. You saw them, you know, coming from a few seasons now. They've been steadily improving, building something special. And a lot of their players really popped this season, right? Sandro Tonali took a massive step forward from last season. Rafael Leao really blossomed this season into a superstar and really a potential game changer. He's still far from a finished player and still could improve and still could, you know, become a more clinical finisher and whatnot. But his ability, his one-on-one skills, he's really taken his game to the next level. So it's been nice to see this Milan team grow over the past couple seasons and really blossom into a good team. But, again, it's their Scudetto to lose. One thing that Milan need to do, right, you think about the potential big ownership takeover from the Middle East. They're saying they could spend 100 million euro in the summer to help bolster this team. And, you know, look, 100 million euro is a heck of a lot of money, and money that most clubs would love for their owner to spend in a summer transfer market. But at the same time, when you think about 100 million euro, you think about how, you know, the cost of players is just rising and rising, and these transfer fees are getting more and more crazy. It's not that much money, depending on what type of players you bring in. Milan have to bring in a younger, more clinical, and reliable striker. You know, they can't certainly rely on Zlatan Ibrahimovic, as we've seen this season. Too many injuries, up there in age. I mean, who knows what his status will even be next season, if he'll play, even if he does play, even if he returns to Milan in a very limited role that he's kind of been reduced to at this point of the season. He's not someone you could rely on, and he's certainly not your starting striker. They've been relying on Olivier Giroud, and he's done a pretty good job. He's come up with some big goals this season for Milan, but if you really want to be consistent Scudetto contenders, and certainly you want to try to make a push at winning that Champions League, making a deep run in the Champions League, right? Like, Milan fans want to win the Scudetto, no doubt about it. Of course they want to win that, but Milan's DNA is in that Champions League. That's what their fans also want, to get back to that European success. You're not going to do that if Olivier Giroud is your primary striker. He's just not at that point in his career anymore. Again, dangerous player, good player, could certainly give you some spot starts here and there, could be lethal off the bench, could come up with some clutch goals as he's done this season, as I said. But they need to go out. Some of that 100 million euro that's being talked about that they could spend this summer has to be focused, or a good chunk of it has to be focused on bringing in a striker that they could really build this team around. You think of a guy like Gianluca Scamacca from Sassuolo. He's been linked with them. He seems to be likely to leave Sassuolo this summer. Inter has also been linked to him. There's talks that, you know, the club president says that, you know, he could be sold abroad because, you know, the financial situation in Italy may not allow a team to spend that type of money to sign Scamacca. You know, Sassuolo certainly looking for 35 million, 40 million euro plus for their young Italian striker. But this, you know, this potential Middle East takeover, ownership takeover for Milan would allow them to have those deeper pockets to potentially meet Sassuolo's asking price if, you know, the club identifies as Scamacca as the perfect guy, the exact striker that they want. Big, strong striker, good in the air with and finishing with his head, could be very clinical in front of goal. I would like to see them sign a player like Scamacca. I think he would be a good option for them. He's proven he could score in Italy and play in Italy. You know, he's represented Italy on the national team, so he's been there, done that. That would be a good signing, but that's certainly something that Milan needs to do if they really want to take the next step domestically next season in Serie A to potentially defend their Scudetto title, assuming they do close out this season with it. And certainly if they want to make noise in the Champions League, where they really, really want to, you know, reestablish themselves as one of the best in Europe. So we'll see what they do there, but that is certainly a must. They have to get that striker position locked down this summer. Inter, you know, they'll be in the market for a striker. I don't know if Dzeko, well, I do know Dzeko's not a long-term solution, but I don't know if Dzeko's even, you know, the guy necessarily that you'd want to run out there again next season, along with Lautaro Martinez, assuming he stays. You know, there's talk that they could try to sign Paulo Dybala, who will be leaving Juventus on a free transfer this summer. We'll see where he winds up, but Scamacca's also been linked to Inter. He would be an interesting choice for them. There's always the possibility, and that rumor is going to be floated out there until, you know, something official happens where it, potential return of Romelu Lukaku, because it seems like he's not going to be staying at Chelsea this summer, unless there's a coaching change at Chelsea, which I don't see that happening. So as long as Thomas Tuchel's there, or there's some sort of, you know, talking between the two parties, and they kind of hash things out and reestablish a relationship and make Lukaku feel like he's part of the team, and they actually, you know, build a team around him, he'll be leaving Chelsea. So there's always that possibility that Inter could potentially look to bring back Lukaku. I know that's what Lukaku would want the most, but we'll see what happens there. So it's certainly, you know, going to be an interesting final three rounds, as I said, between these two Milan clubs battling for the Scudetto. And certainly will be interesting to see what both of these clubs do in the summer transfer market. Both could be battling for a lot of the same strikers potentially to bring in and improve their team offensively. Another topic I wanted to talk about was that Napoli performance against Sassuolo. They absolutely demolished Sassuolo 6-1. It was, you know, if you're a Napoli fan, it was a bit perhaps unfortunate that you conceded that late goal deep into the game, and you could have kept a clean sheet to keep that game even more perfect, but no Napoli fan is going to complain. 6-1 winners over Sassuolo. They just scored so fast and furious in that opening 20 minutes. Four goals in the first 21 minutes. Koulibaly, Osimhen, Lozano, Mertens. Then Mertens and Rachmani scored in the second half. It was just one of the best performances I've seen from Napoli this season, and one of the better performances I've seen from Napoli in recent memory. And if you're a Napoli fan, this is what's so frustrating, because you see them just absolutely steamroll Sassuolo, who are a good side, who have beaten some of the top teams in Italy and really been a thorn in the side of some of these top Italian teams this season. You see the way they perform, and then you think back to them dropping points against Roma, then that absolute collapse against Empoli, which did in their Scudetto hopes, you know, blowing a 2-0 lead with about 10 minutes left in the game and losing 3-2 to Empoli. That was inexcusable last week. And to see them respond like this is certainly a positive from a Napoli standpoint, but at the same time, that's what's so frustrating about this club, that they had that slip up against Empoli. They conceded that goal against Roma to El Shaarawy late to allow them to drop those 2 points in that draw to Roma. So, you know, they cost themselves a shot at the Scudetto, but they absolutely demolished Sassuolo. Now, I'll get back to Napoli in a second, but, you know, I heard so many people say on social media and whatnot that perhaps Sassuolo are already off to vacation, you know, mental vacation. Their players checked out. They're not really competing for anything. If I'm Dionisi, the Sassuolo coach, and you have any thought or any feelings that potentially your players just dogged this game and they have mentally checked out for the season, I don't think he would ever do this. But if he really get that sense that these players checked out mentally and did not show up. I mean, they clearly didn't show up against Napoli just by looking at the scoreline and the performance. But, you know, maybe he did see them fighting harder and whatnot. And, you know, they're looking their eyes. They looked like they were upset. But if they just seemed like they didn't care, they really did mail it in. If I'm Dionisi in the next game, I'm benching all those guys that were out there. Not one of them would see the field as a starter. You could certainly bring on a few as a substitute. But I would not start any one of those if you think they dogged it. You can't have your players, you know, bagging it with this many games left. There's still a month left in the season, four games left. When you count this game, this past round, you can't have your guys dogging it. You're trying to build a culture. You're trying to, you know, close the season out strong. You're trying to still evaluate certain players on the team. You know, who's going to stay, who's going to go. When you think about Sassuolo, as I mentioned, Scamacca could likely leave. Domenico Berardi has been linked with potential move away from Sassuolo, as he always is. Giacomo Raspadori could be leaving. There's so many players, Fratesi, that could be leaving Sassuolo. It could be a real revolution there. You know, you want to evaluate all your players. You want to still see them play strong. You're still trying to set a culture and implement. If you're Dionisi, your first year there, you want to close out strong, so you can't have your players dogging it. And again, if he at all thinks that that was the case in this Napoli game, if I was Dionisi, I would not start any one of those players in the next game, or at least any of the ones that you think did not give 110% out there, because you just can't have that, not this early with four games left when you consider that game. Back to Napoli, they officially clinched Champions League qualification. It really wasn't going to be much of a doubt heading into the final few games of the season, but they made it official. They have returned to the Champions League after a couple of years being absent from that. That was always their goal coming into this season, and that's why I kind of laugh at when I read on social media and sometimes in the Italian media the rumors or thoughts that maybe Napoli should fire Luciano Spalletti, given how the team kind of faltered against Empoli and really cost themselves perhaps a shot at the Scudetto. The goal coming into the season was only to qualify for the Champions League. It was only to finish top four. Of course, any Napoli player, of course, De Laurentiis, of course, the Napoli fans would have loved to have won the Scudetto this season, coming into the season. That would have been obviously the ultimate cherry on top, but that was never really in the cards. Not many people were picking Napoli to even compete for the Scudetto, and there was quite a few people that weren't even picking them to finish top four. I think I personally picked them to finish third. I think I did have them finishing behind Inter and Milan. I went Inter would finish and win the Scudetto. I put Milan second, and I put Napoli third. I might have actually had Napoli second. I'd have to go back and check my predictions, but I had them finishing top three, but I did not pick them to win the Scudetto. I didn't think they'd have a legitimate shot. I thought that they could always hang around like they did, but never did I pick them to win the Scudetto. As the season went on, it became a realistic possibility. They spent some time in first place. They were always within striking distance of both Milan-based clubs. And certainly Napoli fans started to believe that that was a possibility. So as the season goes on, they kind of adjusted their expectations and goals and whatnot. But you can't get so caught up in that and feel and like make a rash decision and be like, we got to fire Spalletti. Spalletti has done an unbelievable job with this team this season. When you think about some of the stuff he's had to deal with players with injuries, Osimhen missed a lot of time. You think about the Insigne story breaking with him, you know, announcing that he's not going to be returning to Napoli next season. This is it. He's going to Toronto FC. That could have derailed things. He could have maybe, you know, potentially excommunicated Insigne from the team and said, you know what, you're not going to be part of this team. But he kept this group together. He's done an outstanding job. The Napoli team was really impressed at points this season. Of course, they had their stinkers, like that Empoli game. Milan had some letdowns. Inter had letdowns this season. Juventus has had letdowns. You're going to have those letdowns. It's about minimizing them, and it's also about the timing of them. Obviously, Napoli's big letdown against Empoli, and then allowing that late equalizer against Roma the week before. Dropping those 4 points the way they did, 5 points the way they did, that certainly did them in the Scudetto race. Whether or not they would have actually caught Milan or caught Inter, that's another story, but certainly Napoli fans would have loved to have had the hope of potentially competing for the Scudetto heading into this final stretch, but that was never the goal or expectation. Their goal was to get into the Champions League. It's mission accomplished for Spalletti and his side, and Napoli fans should be rejoicing in that. They should be very excited. There's an extra stream of revenue money coming in now that Napoli could potentially spend. I know there's a lot of potential rumors with this club, as always. Osimhen being linked to some Premier League sides. Will he stay? As I mentioned, we know Insigne, he is leaving. Lozano's future is up in the air. Who knows? Mertens, the club would like to re-sign him, potentially, De Laurentiis said. But it really will come down to the numbers and what Mertens wants. It seems like Mertens certainly would want to stay in Napoli. So, again, mission accomplished in the Champions League. Napoli fans should be happy with their their absolute demolishing of Sassuolo 6-1, and they should certainly be ecstatic about getting back into the Champions League. Does it matter if they end up finishing third or fourth? No, of course it does not, but from Napoli's standpoint, they certainly would like to finish ahead of Juventus, who are just 1 point behind them. So we'll see if Napoli could close out this season strong in these final three games and maintain their, you know, their lead over Juventus and finish ahead of them this season. Roma ended up drawing 0-0 against Bologna, so that also secured Juventus qualification for the Champions League. So the top four is set in terms of the teams that will finish in the top four: Milan, Inter, Napoli, and Juventus. Of course, the order is yet to be determined, whether or not Milan or Inter, you know, win the Scudetto. Juve, Napoli, they'll fight for third and fourth. Not that it matters, but top four set. We have our Champions League teams. We have the two Milan clubs. We have Juve. So those same three teams will be competing next season, as was this season. The only change is that Napoli will be replacing Atalanta. Atalanta's run in the Champions League ends at 3 years in a row. They certainly, you know, took a step back this season. They've dealt with injuries. Duván Zapata missed a lot of time, and that certainly did not help, because instead of, you know, Luis Muriel being that super sub off the bench, guy that would start some games in place of Duván Zapata and really provide that major spark off the bench and be that wild card player that Gasperini would have in his back pocket to pull off the bench, Luis Muriel had to step in and be the starter. Not that he is not equipped to be a starter. He's been a starter at different points in his career, and he did perform well, but they certainly lost a lot of depth up front with that injury to Duván Zapata. They sold Robin Gosens to Inter in January, but, you know, Atalanta have proven in the past to be immune to selling some of their best players and just bringing in the next guy to replace him and not skipping a beat. And they had a good season. They had a solid season. We'll see how they finish. They're certainly trying to make a push for the Europa League to at least stay competing in that competition. There's always the Conference League, the UEFA Conference League, whatever that new league is called. They could potentially finish there. So it's certainly European qualification is still a possibility for Atalanta. They'll battle with Roma, with Lazio, with Fiorentina for that spot. Of course, they'd rather get into the Europa League over the Conference League, but we have our Champions League teams. Atalanta's not one of them. They kind of take a step back, and you know, it'll be interesting to see what Atalanta do this summer. What do they do to try to get back to competing in the top four? How does losing out on that Champions League revenue money affect the club? Do they have to sell some players? Will they make some changes? It'll certainly be one of the storylines to follow this summer. We'll certainly, you know, keep you covered here on the Calcio Corner podcast with all those transfer rumors surrounding Atalanta and Serie A in general. All right, so I'm going to have on Joe Tacopina. This will be actually his third time joining me on my podcast. He truly is a down-to-earth, genuine guy, easy guy to talk to. He obviously owns Serie A B-side Spal, who just earned salvation this past weekend. They'll be staying up in Serie A B, so I know he's very excited about that. So really excited to talk to Joe and get his insight on this season and what his plans are going forward with the club. So hopefully you enjoyed this interview. Let me welcome in my guest on the Calcio Corner podcast, Mr. Joe Tacopina. How are we doing today, Joe?
Good, Rafael. Good. Very well. Doing a lot better today than I was doing on Friday. So I'm okay.
Yeah, that's a great point, a great launching point, because, you know, this is obviously your first season owning Spal, being the club president. And my guess was, you know, your goals probably coming into this season were a bit more ambitious than perhaps fighting off relegation. But in the end, that's how the season played out for you. I saw a lot of videos on social media of you celebrating with the fans, and it looked like a great time. But, you know, is that celebration for you perhaps more a sense of relief than necessarily pure happiness?
No. It was not happiness. Happiness is not part of what that was. What that was pure relief. I mean, really nothing more than relief. It seemed like a celebration, like we won, you know, the Scudetto in the stadium. It was amazing. The fans all stayed in the stadium for an hour after the game. I think I sent you maybe one of the videos, but there was, I mean, it was as loud as I've ever heard after, you know, we won a game against one of the better teams in the league. We dominated the game, obviously, against one of the better teams in the league. But for them, it was special. Again, for me, it was more like, you know, thank God, because this last month and a half has been really rough on me physically and mentally. I mean, it just has been. You know, we came in here. Look, reality is we closed on August 13th. The season began a week later. So the bulk of the roster was in place, and we came in and we did some triage work and patch jobs. And we took a lot of loans from friends of mine, like Ricky Massaro and Paolo Maldini in Milan. But you know, loans are loans, and it's, you know, it's good to supplement the roster. It's not really, it's almost what we built our roster on this year. And that was again, because of the timing of the closing and everything else. You know, but based on, if you look at this team on paper, I mean, we're a top six team, and you know, I always strive for the top. I always strive to win, Rafael. If I don't, I shouldn't be here, honestly. Right. You know, so it was a year that was, you know, a little difficult in regards to what mentally, at least, I thought, you know, we were going to be doing. But on the other hand, we all came in with the understanding that this was a reboot year. You know, we were dealing with some really heavy, heavy financial burdens from previous contracts under previous regimes that, you know, were sort of not in Spal's identity. You know, when they were in Serie A the last year, they went and made a lot of really expensive purchases of players, long-term contracts that, you know, once they get relegated, it puts you in a real difficult position. And we inherited that sort of financial mess. But that being said, you know, things are definitely turned around and on the right path. And obviously the first thing was to make sure we stayed here in this Serie B for next year, where we could begin our ascent.
Right. And certainly, as you mentioned, you strive for the top and you feel pretty confident about this roster. So what are some lessons or positive things you took away from this season that, you know, could help you guys going forward next season to hopefully make that push and return to Serie A?
Yeah, one of the most important things, obviously, is the 12th man. You know, what I saw in that stadium on Saturday was remarkable. I mean, we had a full stadium. And don't forget, we have one of the nicest stadiums in Italy, not in Serie B, in Italy. You know, and the thing was as loud as I've seen a stadium. And it was something where, you know, they were there to support this team. I mean, you know, a lot of clubs, a lot of fans would be in a very difficult period with the relationship with the team when they're underperforming, as we did all year. This fan base was understood the importance of Saturday against a team that had demolished us 4-0. Now, granted, we were in a COVID crisis in December, but they demolished us in the first game, and you know, we came out. That was a 12th man out there, and so that's one of the things that I come to understand how important this fan base is. The other positives is that, you know, when the pressure's on, when we have to win, when we really have to, we seem to pull together. You know, conversely, when we're playing teams who are well below us in the standings, like Pordenone, Crotone, Cosenza, Alessandria, Vicenza, we play like we're, you know, in Serie C. And right. it's maddening to watch us play and dominate Lecce, to watch us play and dominate Brescia, to watch us play and absolutely dominate Frosinone, three of the best teams in the league, and then do poorly and get outplayed by Cosenza or Crotone, really makes you understand that this is not a physical thing. It's not a technical thing. It's a mental thing. And and that's one of the things we're going to take away from this year and make sure that, you know, the players here next year, whoever remains, is going to have character and heart, because, you know, the name on the back of the jersey is not nearly as important as the contents of what's inside the jersey and the heart. And that's, you know, always been my mantra. It's what's provided me to have successful, you know, teams in Italian football. And certainly, that's it. You know, one of the things I will say was a real positive this year is positive for the team, positive for the results, absolutely horrific for my health, was the amount of games we won in the 94th minute. Latte Lop won, literally, you know, tied two games in the 94th minute in the last month. 94th minute, not 84th minute. Not, I mean, it was just unbelievable. So, you know, we've done that all year. Viviani against Alessandria, Esposito at home against Cosenza. You know, Latte Lot against Perugia, Latte Lot against Brescia the other day. I mean, it's unbelievable. And you know, again, if we played with that level of intensity from minute one, we'd be in a much different position. We threw away a good 15 points this year, which, you know, is frustrating.
Yeah, and I think, you know, from a fan standpoint, perhaps the most frustrating thing you kind of touched upon is when a team plays at the level of their competition. Like, you guys, you said you stepped up against the big boys in Serie B, but then, you know, struggling against the lower teams. That's, from a fan standpoint, it's maddening, right? Because you see that great performance against the teams that are more difficult, but then you stoop down to perhaps the lower competition. And from a fan standpoint, it drives you crazy. I'm sure from an ownership standpoint, the same thing.
Yeah, and that's, again, to me, that's a mental issue that will be addressed, because there's, you know, the character of the players is always something that's important to us. And, you know, you want fighters out there, and it's something that we will obviously address. And again, a lot of what we came into this year, we inherited, but, you know, we're looking to fix everything. We've already started our plan for next season.
And you know, you mentioned you want mentally tough players and whatnot. Is there a specific area you feel the club needs to address this summer in the transfer market? Like, from a position standpoint, something maybe you from an ownership or a coaching standpoint that you feel the club needs to really address to help make that push?
Look, let me first start off by saying I'm not one of these owners who thinks he's also the GM and the sporting director. Okay. There are too many of those, especially in Italian football. You know the names. It generally leads to a disaster. I have input. I've been in Italian football now for 13 seasons, and obviously I will have input, and there's financial restraints, obviously, and there's questions I will always ask. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm trusting my sporting director, because if I didn't trust him, he wouldn't be here. So I'm going to let them make those decisions. But one thing is obvious. We need an individual to score. We need a true scorer. I mean, if you look at our attackers this year, it's a group of pedigree players. I mean, you know, from Lorenzo Colombo, who's a kid, you know, who took Bar from Milan, who started off the season on fire, but he's only 19. And, you know, after November, he hasn't scored. And that's just, you know, something where clearly the, you know, starting and being a focal point of a Serie B team at 19, you know, wears on you. Luca Vito, another one, you know, these are technically great players. Latte Lot, of course, you know, one of my personal favorites, just an amazing kid, quick, unique in talent. You know, Finotto, Matteo is a great striker for Venturao's system in the sense that he attacks the open space. He's a runner. He's a beast. He's not exactly a goal scorer. Okay. So, you know, we don't really have, for all the pedigree we have, and of course, you had the name Giuseppe Rossi, who is in fact a goal scorer, but, you know, Giuseppe is at the point of his career where it's touch and go. You know, his health is an issue, obviously, and you know, being healthy and being able to play 90 minutes and being relied upon every game is something that obviously will be a challenge, right? So we need someone who we go to sleep at night knowing that they're banking 15 goals in Serie B at a minimum. That's one thing we certainly need, and one thing we'll be after.
Oh, yeah, definitely need, you know, you got to outscore the other team, so you definitely need that proven and clinical goal scorer you can rely on. And I know one guy you mentioned when I had you on before the season started that you were high on was Demba Sek, the young forward. You guys ended up selling him, I believe, outright to Torino in January. Was that just a case of him maybe wanting to join a Serie A club? He had that opportunity? Nope. Or was there something else behind that move? Or
yeah, it was, look, this is what Spal's about. This is the greatness of Spal's Settore Giovanile, as we say, or which, you know, translates to the youth sector. It is where Spal gets its weapons, and it's where Spal is able to be self-sustaining, and it's why Spal was one of the only teams in Italian football that were profitable 3 years in a row before the pandemic. It's because of situations like that. Look, Demba Sek is a great talent, okay? But he wasn't really starting for us in Serie B. He has one goal in Serie B. He has enormous potential for sure, and I think he's going to be a great player. But, you know, when we were offered an important number like 4 million euros for Demba Sek and 20% of future resale. So, in other words, if he becomes a player I expect he'll become, we still have another big payday on Demba Sek. So, you know, we received a great number for a guy who basically they purchased his potential, not his track record, right? His track record isn't there yet, but his potential is. And that's someone we developed from our youth sector. We have a bunch of those guys. Spal. I mean, there are major teams from Juventus to Milan looking at a group of our players. And, you know, that's our jewel that we will fortify the first team with it. Our goalie, Demba Thiam, came here when he was a refugee at like 12, 13 years old. He's 23 from Senegal. He's a phenomenal talent, an amazing goalie. He has arms like wingspan of an airplane. and, you know, those are the things that get me excited. Really growing up players. Patrick Peta, another one, Polish national team player, a kid who's just one of the best, first of all, one of the best individuals I've ever met. He's a young kid, but as tough as nails. And you know, Marco Mancosu, our great Torre Quartista, you know, has said that Peta is probably the best player on the team. And, you know, again, he's only 20 years old. So that's the beauty of Spal, and that's where Spal gets his identity. And that's important to us because, look, that's how we will be able to punch above our weight. That's how we'll be able to compete with the bigger teams. You know, not by spending and losing 100 million a year. That's never happening here, obviously. But by being nimble, being quick to identify unproven talent, and by developing players from our youth sector all the way up to the first team. And people know when you come to Spal, you know, as a young player, you have a chance to make it to the first team. There are a lot of clubs in Italy that's not a possibility. You know, right. So it's something that we are really proud of, and it's really what sets our identity. So Dembasek was just one of the points of that youth sector, one of the byproducts of the greatness of our youth sector. And again, great player. I hope he does really well. And of course, I'm financially motivated for him to do well because 20% of, right, of whatever is going to be a lot of money.
And it's definitely a good model you've outlined, like the plan with Spal, and it's a sustainable model. It allows the club to, as you said, you know, be profitable prior to the pandemic, and also to be competitive, to develop within and you know, flip talent when need fit and whatnot. But also, as you said, you got young players motivated because they know that they can make it to the first team, as opposed to at perhaps some of these bigger clubs where they know they almost got no shot unless they're really one of those standout talents.
Right, exactly.
One last thing I wanted to ask you about was your coach. You had Pep Clotet as your coach at the start of the year, and he was a coach that you were high on as well. You guys made the tough decision to move on from him in January and bring in Roberto Venturato. Is the plan to have him stay as the coach for next season, or is that something that, you know, I know you said you don't like to get involved too much with these decisions and you leave it up to your sporting director, but what's the plan there with the coach?
Well, on those decisions, again, when I say I don't want to get involved, I'm involved, believe me.
No, I know.
Approve them. I have to approve them, but it emanates from the analysis of the sporting director, right? So I want to hear what the sporting director is going to report to me, and then we'll have an intellectual discussion about the pros and the cons of making moves and not moves. Right now, Roberto Venturato is our coach, and we plan to have him as our coach next year. He's on the contract. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as I said, if I didn't trust him 100% as our coach, he would not have been on the bench on Saturday.
Right.
He's, he's done some pretty amazing things with Cittadella, you know, one of the smallest clubs in Serie B. Mm-hmm. They spend less than everybody by far every year. And somehow he brought them to the Serie B playoff finals, you know, two consecutive seasons. So he does a lot with a little. We're arming him with some pretty decent players and big players, and we'll see what he does. But right now, that is our coach. And look, football is, you know, the one thing I'll never say is or I shouldn't say, I've said it before, this is our coach for the foreseeable future. This is our, you know, director for the foreseeable future, you know, but football is football. And you have to understand that.
Yeah,
it's such a fast moving things change. There's such a fast moving business, a whole host of circumstances that could cause anything to change. But the plan is obviously for Roberto to lead us into next season. And I'm very excited for next season. I'll tell you, we've been making plans for next season in the last 2 months. You know, we really have identified our targets and everything else 2 months ago, like without even me thinking for a second, we'd have to worry about being in a different category. And I never thought we would have to worry about it. I really didn't. The team made it very exciting for me. I'm really glad we waited until the 37th of 38 weeks that I could actually go to sleep at night, you know, relaxed. But say, this is Calcio.
Yeah, it's a feeling that I don't think anyone, you know, even though fans live and die with their teams too, from an ownership standpoint, it's I can't even imagine the type of feelings and pressure that, you know, you felt and whatnot. But I'm glad that it all worked out for you this season, and certainly wish you nothing but the best heading forward with the club. I have no doubt that you'll do great things with this club. You have that proven track record in Italian football and whatnot. But, I can't thank you enough, Joe, for taking the time to come on my podcast and talk about Spal and all these great topics. Stay safe and definitely hope to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Rafael. I really appreciate your time and your questions. Always, as always, right on point. So thank
no
you.
No problem. Take care.
Take care. Bye-bye.
All right. Now on to buy or sell to cover some of the storylines and rumors that have been dominating the Italian media and the world of football. Number one, buy or sell it. If Genoa are relegated, that would be bad for Serie A. I will sell this one. Now look, Genoa have plenty of historical context in Serie A in the history of Calcio. They are the oldest team. They're the first ever professional Italian football team. So there is some historical context to them that would be lost if they are sent down to Serie B. Not that that changes anything in terms of them being the first team or anything like that, but you know, it would be a little disappointing to see them head down to Serie B. They do have very passionate fans. But I don't think overall, if they are relegated to Serie B, that really has any impact on Serie A, and it's necessarily a bad thing. Now, what would be unfortunate if they are relegated is that we'd have to go at least one season without the Derby della Laterna. Those games between Genoa and Sampdoria are some of the most hotly contested games all season. You know, two very passionate fan bases that can't stand each other. You know, I mentioned that on Twitter this past weekend. You know, you think back to 2011 when Sampdoria were relegated to Serie B. The Genoa fans took to the streets that year and had like a fake funeral for Sampdoria and their fans because of the relegation. So there's just a lot of hatred between these two sides and two fan bases. So, you know, from that standpoint, it would certainly be a disappointment. In my opinion, that those games between Genoa and Sampdoria, they're perhaps the most underrated derby in Italian football. They certainly don't get the same hype as the Derby della Capitale, Derby della Madonnina, Derby d'Italia, and for obvious reasons, because those other derbies include some of the big names in football, Inter Milan, Juve, and so on. So, you know, I don't think it's a bad thing if Genoa get relegated necessarily. Perhaps it's a good thing for them, as weird as that may sound. You know, they've been teetering on the verge of relegation for a few seasons now. Maybe going down gives them a fresh start, opens their eyes, and recognizes some sort of changes they need to make. But I don't think it's a bad thing for Serie A. The only bad thing is, you know, we potentially have to go at least one season without those Derby della Laterna games. All right, number two, buy or sell it. It's a good idea to make a coaching change this late in the season. I will buy this one. I don't necessarily love it, but I'll buy it. So Venezia, they recently made a coaching change, having fired Paolo Zanetti, and now Cagliari have fired Walter Mazzarri with just three games left in the season. The Venezia situation is a little different. While obviously they aren't mathematically eliminated from staying up in Serie A, they still do have a shot to stay up and avoid relegation. I think they personally are toast, and I think they're done and they will be relegated, so I don't think a coaching change matters at all there. I don't think firing Zanetti is going to change anything for Venezia. I think they're already relegated to Serie B. Cagliari, on the other hand, they do have much more than a legitimate shot to staying up in Serie A. They certainly are in a position to stay up in Serie A. They're not in a great position. They're obviously fighting off relegation, but they are in a position to stay up. So, you know, if the club feels Mazzarri has lost the team and a change is needed, even with only three games left, I think you still do have to make that change. You know, you have to be willing to pull out all the stops, do anything possible to ensure salvation. Going down to Serie B is the last thing that Cagliari wants, obviously. Now we'll see exactly what Alessandro Agostini, the man who is set to replace Mazzarri, can do with this club in such a short amount of time. I would not expect him to come in and make wholesale changes and start changing the formation and changing all these tactical ideas and the identity of this team with only three games left in such a short time. You don't want to totally rock the ship too much to the point where these players don't understand what their role is and what the game plan is and the identity of the team with such little time left in the season. You know, perhaps Agostini can make some minor tactical changes, some in-game decisions that perhaps Walter Mazzarri would not have done or would not have seen when standing on the sideline that, you know, perhaps could help this team fight off relegation. So I don't have a problem with the team making a coaching change this late in the season. Again, it's all hands on deck at this point in the season. You have to be willing to do whatever you feel is best to try to give yourself a shot at staying up in Serie A, and if that means making a coaching change with just three games left, I have no problem with Cagliari doing this, getting rid of Mazzarri and bringing in Agostini. So that will do it for the 70th episode of the Calcio Corner podcast. I hope you have enjoyed it. A special thank you to Joe Tacopino for taking the time to join me on this episode and be so generous with his time. Once again, please be sure to subscribe on iTunes, Spotify, and Audioboom. Feel free to leave a rating and comment. That'd be greatly appreciated to help us grow. Feel free to spread the word of the Calcio Corner podcast to any friends or family members that you think would enjoy a Calcio-centric podcast. And until next time, guys, ciao.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Calcio Corner podcast with your host, Raffaele. If you've enjoyed this episode, please rate, review, and subscribe on your preferred podcast listening platform. We really appreciate that effort. Until next time.